What up? Matt Berzal. Filling in for Gary Sharp. Thanks to Damon and Gary for putting up with me as I tried to navigate the idiotic drivers of the great city of Omaha. Iowa people don't think I didn't see you out there too. Dummies. I like talking to people with common sense because everybody driving today didn't have much common sense, but we're going to go to the hotline here, the Dimon Collision Center hotline. We're going to talk to my good buddy, who I haven't talked to in a hot minute because he's just probably too cool for me anymore, but the one and only Johnny Tallman. John Tallman, how are you today, bud?
Wait a minute. What do you mean too cool? I just saw you not too long ago.
Yeah, that's true.
I dropped in for a visit.
You did.
I want to go back to the driver thing. So we got Iowa license plates, Nebraska license plates. Any others you wanted to comment on?
No. I think the Texas people that are in, there's a lot of Texas people, they just stay off the road. They're like, nope, out.
Yeah, I know. Growing up there, that's true.
Literal snow day.
Sort of freezing temp. We're good.
You had to love that, though, growing up in Texas as a, like, once you got to 16, how you just weren't like, hey, Texas people, it's rained and it's 30. I'll come drive you everywhere for $100 an hour. And they'd have been like, yep, let's do it.
The best is when you have a rear wheel drive Camaro and there's ice. That's called going nowhere.
And they're all just speeding as fast as they can.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of acceleration and there's a whole lot of tires moving, but the vehicle, the body, the chassis, it's not going anywhere.
Playing pinball and everything. little thing that's out there. Oh, Johnny boy. Well, Nebraska at home again for bowl season. It's a habit that I wish they would break very soon. But I think, and the camp I've been in for a while is gaining momentum. But I think Frost, you know, kind of assessed things and said, hey, we got a lot of young talent. Let's get them, take this year and get them faster, stronger, bigger. And I know people will be in the live reps camp, but as they go through this, how young do you think Nebraska can get next year? Everybody said it was a young team this year. I didn't feel it was that young. But can they input a lot of these young guys that have redshirt or some of their incoming freshmen they're going to have and really make some noise next year?
Yeah, it's funny. It's like I almost – and you and I talked about this not on air, but just, you know, via text or just personal phone calls. Like, you almost get the sense that there was a concerted effort with some of these younger players to hold on to the redshirt, you know, through the four-game rule. You know, I know there was a few players like Ramir Johnson where it's kind of like, he was only in for one play there or a couple plays. But you almost got this feeling that there were certain players, and again, I'm speculating here, but there were certain players they maybe could have used in certain areas, whether that be special teams, whether that actually be, you know, in a backup role, or somewhere that they almost held back in order to, because there's a balancing act too, right? First of all, you want to win games.
Uh-huh.
Second of all, the conversation that probably isn't had enough is you need to really look at your scholarship distribution. And you want to try not to leave yourself with a massive hole at a key position. So you almost want to give yourself the best chance to win, spread out the scholarships to where, you know, you're providing yourself with some depth and you're not overloaded, say, in your junior class, but your sophomore class is empty. So there's all these things. But back to my original point, I almost feel like there was a concerted effort with some of these younger guys, specifically in the 19 class, that unless it was a dire need to play them, let's bite the bullet and try to build some depth by keeping the red shirt on some of those folks. So, I mean, that's the way I looked at it. I don't know if that was in real time how they thought about it, but as organized as they appear to be in a lot of things, at least planning ahead and looking ahead and thinking that way, that was kind of the impression that I got.
Yeah, and with the attrition from 17 and 18, you know, I think almost those whole classes are gone now. That's a
right.
big lag. So I think the strategy is good. Now I think next year truly you'll get to see their development level. Right, can we develop these guys that have been out of this for a while? Because you look at a room like the running back room, right? That running back room, which was a little thin this year, gets really thick really quick. You know, you got a lot of guys coming mm-hmm. in. You did, you know, not use Ramir. He's able to redshirt. Ronald Tompkins is another one. You got Mills back. You got Brody Belt still in the mix. Xavier Morrison. Like, you got all these guys coming in. So problem or positions of like scarcity now become thick really fast. So that's something I'm excited to see because we got to start to put this talent out there and see it play. Because if that is the issue, you got to solve that then.
Yeah, and you and I talked about it with offensive line, you know, or defensive line for that matter. You know, that A, and I know it sounds like a broken record, but it's the hardest position to come in and play as a true freshman. So if you do sign a class of guys with, say, length, but you're still needing to add size, obviously they need to mature physically, you know, going from 18 years old to lining up along a line of scrimmage across from a guy who's 21 or 22, that's another group. You know, 1 year of development, 1 year of just physical maturity, 1 year of understanding the offense and the defense. And so you're right. I think a lot of these positions, and that's another one, become a lot deeper really, really quick if you can get a large group of redshirts redshirted for a year and then move them on into the next year. And you're right. I think a big part of this is just go back and look at some of the classes. Mm-hmm. You look at the 2018 class, the 2017 class. We can sit and talk all day about the reasons that the classes or some of those players aren't in Lincoln anymore, or it didn't work out, or whatever the case may be. But the fact is, that's a humongous hole that we kind of casually dismiss. Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that 19 class is pretty much gone, and then we move on to the next subject. That's a huge deal. This isn't the NFL. You can't just go get a free agent. You miss on a massive recruiting class, especially this close to when you came in and took over. You've left yourself quite a big gap, and you got to go fill it, and that takes time.
Well, not trying to be a defeatist or a negative person about it, but this too many folds, 100-fold isn't the time, right? Because that 2021 or the 2020 schedule is no joke. Since he was in their conference championship, Central Michigan was in their conference championship. The back end of that schedule is nasty. Then you get into 2021, which is a gauntlet. I mean, that lag has to be overcome quickly. That's why I think the route of the JUCO. You know what, Nebraska is very active in the JUCO market right now. It's huge for them because you have to have a player that may be a little more ready-made than a learn-on-the-fly freshman. You got to have guys that come and contribute. Their success over these next 2 years, to me, really depends on their success of nailing some of these JUCO kids they have coming in.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, because with there's been the constant debate among people that follow recruiting, cover recruiting, talk about recruiting, you know, dissected, and you look at what Bill Snyder did at Kansas State and junior college players, and you look at all these schools and their different philosophies on how many junior college players to keep. And this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about scholarship distribution. If you overload on junior college players in a certain class, that's fine. We're talking about physical maturity. You've got a better chance of some of these players potentially. No one's a guarantee, as we've seen with some JUCO players that even this staff has brought in, that are going to play, but you're at least giving yourself a leg up there. But you want to be careful not to completely overload, because then you get very top heavy in the back half of your distribution. You got a lot of juniors and seniors, and then you have to go back and fill those again. So I'm really curious as to what the total number ends up being. You know, they're the Omar Mannings out there and the guys that they really, really want if you're Nebraska, but how many does Nebraska end up taking in totality? You've got some key positions of need, wide receiver, linebacker, et cetera, even defensive line. When they get those filled, where does that number stop? And then what does junior college recruiting look like in the 2021 class, 22, 23? That, to me, is going to be interesting as well.
JT, you guys ever go through and look at, like, the ideal amount to carry per position? Like, for you, that to me would be an interesting discussion of what your breakdown of it.
Yeah, that's tough just because you have so many different systems, right? If you're comparing what, you know, Georgia Tech did for years at certain positions, obviously they're not going to be hitting the same wide receiver numbers that, you know, another school with a little bit more of a spread mentality might have. Defensively, 3-4 odd front versus even front versus 4-3 versus some schools that run, you know, more defensive backs versus linebacker. I mean, you just have so many different things there. It's almost like I said, if there was a way in the recruiting industry also to accurately give a grade for a team and how well they fill needs, which is almost impossible because every school has different needs every year. And then sometimes the perception is in the eye of the coach, you know, what is truly our biggest need? And that's even debatable. So there's some subjectiveness to that as well, but it's a good point. I think at the end of the day, you could probably come up with a general number, but again, you'd get into trouble with different schematics and what people are running and, you know, they may need more linebackers at school A than school B, just based on kind of what they're running defensively, or they may need more wide receivers, or they don't, they do need a fullback, they don't need a fullback, you know, and that's a rare position these days. So it's an interesting concept. You just have to figure out a way to generalize that across a lot of different schemes.
Tell me this, if you were going to have Nebraska pattern someone and their success, what's realistic for Nebraska to pattern themselves after?
You mean like a comp for like another school?
Like a school, like a team, like a methodology. For me, I like to ask people, like, what is your vision of this? Because I don't think we get the vision of it all the time from Lincoln. So, I mean, for me, I have a couple schools in mind. Like, if you can do this, what they're doing, you're going to be okay. You know, their breakdown of things, the way they operate, they execute, or, you know, their main focuses of their recruiting efforts.
Right. No, it's a good question. When someone asks me that question about a school, I always start and I look at where they exist regionally, right? So if I'm going to look at a comp for Nebraska, I look at, okay, who are they competing against in the region of the country that their university exists, being the Midwest. You look at the teams. I mean, you look at what Minnesota did this year. You look at what Wisconsin's been doing for X amount of years. You look at what, you know, we can go on and on and on. But to me, it's not hard to throw a dart against the board and be like, well, if these teams can do X, Y, Z on a regional and a national scale, I realize there's population differences between where Nebraska is and some of these others. But just generally, if you are able to, I mean, you go and look at some of the Big Ten West teams and some of the players that they have, they're not all coming from the Midwest. There's guys from Miami on those rosters. There's guys from Texas. There's guys. So that's where I begin. And then I think I move from there to, I look at where they are historically, you know, what is their tradition? You know, what have they done in the past? And so I kind of meld this all together as a puzzle piece. And I think it would be those types. And I even said at the beginning of the year, if you have a school like Wisconsin that at least is consistently in the mix to always win the Big Ten West, or at least go to Indianapolis, why can't Nebraska be there? And I think a lot of schools in the West have asked themselves that question. If you're Iowa, if you're Minnesota, why can't you do what they're doing? And again, I understand there's always differences and different challenges, but that's where I start with my comp, and then I branch out from there.
If you were going to grade Nebraska as an offensive line this year, what would you give them for a grade? Because I have a starting grade and I have a finishing grade, and they're not.
Yeah,
the same grade.
I think in the beginning, I think it's fair to say you're in the C range.
That's a little lower, but go ahead.
Yeah, I know you. But I mean, man, maybe I'm being too conservative, but call it a C minus.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the year, you're probably in the B minus range.
Right.
But I want to say this about my grade. I'm going with that. I think there was a lot of development. That you look at what you had at center from beginning to end, and I think everybody, once they kind of saw the fact that some of these guys had never started before, a guy like Cam Jurgens never played that position before, let alone at the Power 5 level. So there was growth there. So my grade has a little bit to do with watching somebody take the next step, not do I think they're, you know, a top 15 offensive line, you know, in the country. That's not when I say B minus, just that I saw some growth from there to there. But I'm assuming you're going to be lower and lower on your beginning and finish grade.
No, I think by the, and it's, to wrap it up as a whole, I mean, when it first started, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be a long
You were in the D or the F range?
I was probably in the D range.
Okay.
Because I had expected more. And it was silly of me because I had let my ears believe what my eyes hadn't seen. Right, we had heard today we got 12 that can play. We got this. We got competition. We got, and I had a ton of respect for Nebraska's defensive line before the season started. So that's going to be a strength of it. It has to be. Well, if the coaches who I view are smart are saying, "Hey, this line is doing well against these guys," that meant to me, okay, I got what I perceive as good, and what's going against it is perceiving as doing well. I mean, that's a good sign. Then when it all got out on the field, it was different. But I will give Coach Austin a ton of credit. And I will give Cam Jurgens a ton of credit because I was really hard on Cam Jurgens. The progress they made through the season was progress I didn't know after watching the first couple games could be made. Now, were they perfect? By no means. I think B minus by the end is a fair grade, because there were still misses on screens in the open field box, you know, that you can't do. There were getting trucked by, you know, whomever at whatever time. Those can't happen. And the crucial parts of the game, that's why it's hard for me to be any higher than that. The crucial parts of it, of the game, you know, you have to be the guy that makes those plays, because you have to ease some strain on your quarterback, who's obviously struggling at the time. So that's, they progressed, but now it's got to be, you can't take a step back, right? I thought they were playing at a B level at the end of the previous season. I got back to a lower, like a D-ish level. You can't do that. You have to, it's got to be a ratchet. I'm at a B minus right now. When I start this season next year, my minimum expectation is going to be a B minus game, and get them then evolving up into an A minus by the mid to end of the season next year. Like, that's what it has to be. It can't be. You can't take steps backward anymore.
No, I think that's true. And I think the other thing too, that towards the end of the season that got Nebraska into a lot of trouble, was you had certain plays where, whether they were running bubbles or at least outside plays, where the offensive line actually would do their job correctly, mm-hmm. or at least for the most part, but you had outside guys that missed blocks in one-on-one situations. And I'm not saying that everybody looked at that and blamed the offensive line, but sometimes, you know, football can look messy if you're watching it in real time. And I think sometimes that became, you know, that became something that kind of got lost in translation, is that, you know, everybody's got to hit their block on certain plays. And even if the offensive line is improved, you know, one person not doing their job can blow things up. But I'm with you. I think if they start at that level next year, you've got a lot of promise moving forward.
John Tomlin joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. That's you know me well, but I always stir it up a little bit, and you want to get everybody fired up. Like, hey, I think they really need to run some more swing passes. Like, I think that's going to be a huge part of, of the offense.
Such high success rate.
They will look at you like they want to like cuss you, but they're respectful of what they perceive as your knowledge of the game. They're like,
swing passes. Let's keep them coming.
JT, I'll get you out of here on this one. It might take you a little bit, but that's okay.
Okay.
I don't know if there's any way, people ask all the time, is there going to be an open competition for a quarterback coming into the season? I'm in the camp that, be it Vedrill or McCaffrey or whomever, they're going to have to do so much off the field, be that through workout, be that through training, be that through film session, be that through 7-on-7, that they're going to have to differentiate themselves into being in the mix in the fall. Do you think there will be a true competition for the quarterback spot at Nebraska in the spring?
Man, yeah, I think it depends on what is true competition. Is it a situation where Adrian Martinez comes in and everybody goes, okay, this is last year's starter, you have to go beat him. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
That's how it's presented to the group. Or is it, all right, everyone's starting, truly, everyone's starting at the same spot. Go, prove it. You know, my feeling is, and this is not just a Nebraska thing, but most schools, whether you're in a situation like Nebraska where healthy competition is probably a good thing at this time, I'm just saying, or you are in a place where you've got a returning quarterback that, you know, no one behind him is probably going to beat him out. I think you probably, the more likely scenario is you're going into it going, this is the returning starter, now you guys have to prove you can beat him. That's what I think, without knowing how they view it specifically, that's how I think it would go. I think, too, there's also in the back of your mind that subconscious of, well, I know this guy's the starter. Yes, we're having an open competition. Yes, we want to see if somebody can get beat out. But there's also that subconscious. So I guess it's just how much they rid themselves of that feeling of knowing that this player has done X amount of, started X amount of games and done this. And how wide do you really want to open it up? My hope is that every competition is truly wide open and go get it. And I think with the quarterback position, though, it's a lot broader, just because there's that. I mean, they talked all offseason about leadership and wanting Adrian to be more of a leader in this way and this way. And so I think you add all that on top of it, too, and it makes the quarterback situation, or I should say the competition that you're talking about, even more interesting. So that's just my take without knowing exactly how they want to go about it. I think they go into it going, Adrian is the returning starter. Let's see who can beat him.
Well, Johnny boy, it will be fun to watch, and I hope that is how they operate, because I do think there's talent there, and you got to get talent on the field. And I want to believe, that the sandbagging of everybody in redshirting and we're going to be really young, but we're going to be really athletic and in better shape works. And I hope they can all laugh in our face here in a little bit when it happens. So we shall see, but I'm not going to say anything. I'm already at 6-6, so next year my prediction is 6-6, but I ain't talking much about it till my eyes see something on the field.
There you go. Keep it conservative. There you go.
Yeah. I think about getting some sleeves like you, too. What do you think?
I like it. Let's do it.
All right.
I'm in for this.
Yeah, I'll be look good in sleeves.
When do we start? This takes some time.
Yeah, I know. I've heard. Building the persona. Giant Boy, always good to talk to you, boss. I'm glad you're in better health, and I look forward to seeing you again real soon.
You got it, buddy. Have a good one, all right?
See you, boss.
All right, bud.
John Tallman, everybody, the best in the biz. We're going to take a break here, come back, we'll wrap up hour one on the Gary Sharp Show. Well, we won't. We're going through the top of the hour. Don't make faces at me like that, George. it was like this morning, right? So I had a conversation with an Iowa fan.
Yeah.
And somehow Nito came into play.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked at me like, you know what these are. I was like, what the hell is that supposed to be? Like, we played Nebraska in the 90s. You know what these are. What are you talking about? Get off my case. You say it, say it.
We're good.
I'll deny everything. She gave me a look there like, no, we're not doing that. I'm like, oh,
no, we're good.
All right, going to break. We'll be back. Gary Sharp Show.